We're doing a series, a 5-week series, and so different people will be doing each one of the different faculties. So the five faculties are five mental factors that must reach a state of dominance in the mind for awakening to take place. They're considered the basic building blocks of meditation practice. The Pali word for the faculties is Indriya, and it's named after the Hindu god Indra, which is the god of thunder and rain. And the idea is that it's a dominant god, and the faculties dominate certain qualities. They basically dominate the opposite. For instance, faith, which is also called confidence or conviction or trust, controls doubt. Energy controls laziness. Mindfulness controls forgetfulness. Concentration controls distraction. And wisdom controls ignorance. Developing them are important skills for any meditator to have. These qualities are present in almost every activity that we have in our lives. They're essential in developing any skill, whether it's playing a musical instrument, training in a sport, or cultivating a meditative mind. One way of thinking about these qualities is how one leads to the other. Let's say you want to learn to play the guitar, and you go to your first lesson, and you've learned three chords, you know, and within, you know, by the end of the lesson, those three chords actually sound like a song. And so you feel confidence, and that confidence gives rise to energy. So during the week, you know you have a lesson coming, so you get kind of excited and energetic, and you're going to work really hard, you know, so that next time you can learn more. As you practice, what you need is to really pay close attention. That's mindfulness. You pay attention to, are you getting the chords right? How's your posture? And as you do it over and over and over again, that's how concentration develops. If you keep playing long enough, you might find that your fingertips start to blister. And that's when you need the fifth factor, which is wisdom. Wisdom tells you whether what you're doing is skillful or not, whether what you're thinking is skillful or not. So it's pretty much the same thing in meditation. Confidence comes first, because without it, you would never even start meditating. You wouldn't start thinking about it. You have to be inspired by something. You may have met someone, read a book, done something that brought the idea to your mind. And then once you started meditating, then your experience told you that it works. You learned that by watching your breath, you can calm your anxiety. The next faculty is effort. The more confident we are, the more likely we will apply ourselves to practice. There's no practice, no spiritual practice without effort. A regular meditation practice requires effort. It takes effort just to get to the cushion, just to sit down and meditate. Once we're there, we have to make some effort to turn attention to the breath or to let go of thinking. Effort's an art. It's important to have ease in your effort. The next faculty is mindfulness. Mindfulness is simply the capacity to track what's happening in the present. Mindfulness is inspired by confidence. We make a wholehearted effort to become more awake and attentive to the present moment. We learn to recognize what's happening without resisting it, without conflict or clinging. As the attention becomes more stable and the forces of distraction weaken, we can develop the fourth quality, the fourth faculty, concentration. Concentration is the unification of the mind. With concentration, the mind is less fragmented. It becomes increasingly composed, focused, and unified. We're like a musician absorbed in playing a score. Concentration helps mindfulness to penetrate beneath the surface chatter of the mind, to see what's going on a deeper level. A mind that's confident, engaged, mindful, and focused can develop wisdom or discernment. Discernment is a faculty that helps us see clearly which thoughts and actions lead to happiness and which ones lead away from happiness. Another way of thinking about it is wisdom lets us see what's skillful in our minds and what's not skillful. These five qualities are qualities that we all already have to some degree. But to learn a skill, you have to apply yourself and practice regularly. You learn more quickly when you practice every day. So too in meditation. Another way of working with the faculties is to be aware of how they balance each other. Confidence or faith need to be balanced with wisdom or discernment. Excess faith leads to blind belief with no understanding, trusting blindly. It's easy to see how someone may be inspired by a teacher after hearing some inspiring wisdom and then put so much trust in them that they may ignore the teacher or the organization's ethical transgressions. We've seen this in the fanaticism of so many cults and fundamentalist religious movements. Wisdom without faith can lead to spiritual arrogance, the belief that our current level understanding is the whole picture. Right now, I know exactly where it's at, and that's it. No room for growth. Excess investigation can lead to tension, to nitpicking, and doubt. It tends to ignore intuition, what we call leaps of faith, which is often how we grow in new ways and discover new things. The next two faculties that balance each other are energy and concentration. Energy, excess energy leads to agitation and restlessness. Too little energy leads to laziness. You can think of, you might be tired and not have much energy, and then you drink a cup of coffee, and that kind of gives you way too much energy. You know, and you sit there and try to meditate, and your mind is spinning and running very quickly. So what you need at that point is more concentration. Too much concentration will calm the mind. It can make you lethargic. So you need to get your energy to arise, to balance it. Mindfulness is essential to all of them. Mindfulness is simply awareness of what's present. It can never be too strong. Mindfulness is being aware of the body, feelings, and thoughts. The first faculty is called sadha in Pali. It literally means to place your heart upon. It's commonly translated as faith. But a lot of people have problems with the word faith, so it's been translated as confidence, as conviction, or as trust. Some modern Buddhists, like Sharon Salzberg, have tried to actually reclaim the word to mean something quite a bit different. She defines faith as trusting your own deepest experience. That there's an inner quality that we all have, which unfolds and grows as we learn to trust that experience. An experience which includes the truth that there's suffering in life. I'm curious, before I go on, how many of you have had difficulty with the word faith? And how many of you still do? Okay, thank you. So, you know, I'm trying to reclaim the word a little bit. You know, I use both confidence and faith. None of the words quite fit as well for me as to place your heart upon. I sort of like that, you know, to actually rest your heart on something. Faith includes the future, even though the future might just mean the next moment. It's dependent partially on intuition and instinctive knowing without the use of the rational process. For example, and that's not really mystical. You know, sometimes people think that that sounds a little bit mystical, but imagine that, you know, a friend of yours just learned how to do a headstand. So it might give you the confidence to try yourself. You know, well, they did it. I can do it. But you don't really know that you can do it. You've never done it before. So that's where faith comes in. You know, you trust. It's an intuition. I can probably do it. It's a little bit of confidence. And as you try to learn it, and then you kind of begin to balance and a little bit wobbly, your faith starts increasing. Oh, yeah, I'm almost there. You know, I can do it. And then you eventually do it, and it's easy. Now you know that you can do it. Faith sparks our initial inspiration to practice meditation. It also sustains our ongoing efforts. When we talk about sadha, we are talking about a heartfelt confidence in the possibility of our own awakening, of our own deep happiness. That's why we practice. We practice because we want to be happy. To place the heart upon does not mean rigidly believing in something and being defensive about opening to new ideas. It doesn't mean using that which we have faith in as a way of feeling separate or superior from others. We experience faith in different levels. In the suttas, the Buddhist discourses, there's a classic story about a group of people gathered on the edge of a flooding stream, and they want to go to the far shore, but they're afraid. They don't know what to do until one wise person comes along. They check out the situation, and they jump. And they make it. And seeing the example, they say, well, yeah, it can be done. And then they also jump. In this story, the near shore is their usual confused condition, and the far shore is the awakened mind. Inspired by witnessing another, we say, yes, it can be done. That's one level of faith. But it still takes courage to actually jump ourselves. After we have jumped ourselves, when we say, yes, it can be done, that's quite a different level of faith. The first instance, when we see someone else do it, it's an example of what's called bright faith. Or confidence is inspired by someone we've met or something we've read which moves us. perhaps were inspired by person's qualities of love and compassion. We can sense the possibility of being happier in our own lives. You have to have some level of faith or confidence to start practice. You're all here because you have some faith that practice is something that will make you happier. Right faith is a wonderful feeling. It's an important beginning, but it's also unreliable because it's not based on experience. We might encounter somebody one day and we're very inspired, and then we encounter somebody the next day and we're also very inspired, but maybe in the opposite direction. We can be distracted by whatever influence comes into our lives, the last wind. We've all experienced being initially very enthused about something and then it fading away. As we practice meditation, a deeper level of faith develops. This is called verified faith. It's grounded in our own experience, rather than coming from someone or somewhere outside of ourselves. We learn from our own experience that practice is helpful. Maybe you've learned that if you do mindful breathing, you can calm your anxiety, or it can help you become more patient, or that staying mindful of your body gives you more stability and calm. Maybe your angry outbursts have decreased. With each of these experiences, your confidence in both your ability to be mindful and the value of mindfulness grows. When we see someone accomplished, it can give us confidence that we can do the same thing. An example in my life is working with pain. I've had chronic pain since I was a child. And when I first started practicing, I would hear the teachers talk about how to work with pain. And one of the common things that they would say, the examples they would give, is you're sitting in meditation and your knee starts hurting, and you know, you pay attention to the pain, you observe the pain, you accept it, you see a change. You know, it's really good advice on how to be mindful with pain. And then you stand up and the pain's gone. And it used to really make me angry because my pain didn't go away when I stood up. It was there all the time. And it's very different working with pain when it's something that goes away. And so I would talk to my teachers, and you know, and I'd get this advice that just never quite registered, until I met a Dharma teacher that lived with chronic pain, and she was happy. You know, she still had her pain, and she was still able to be very happy and work with the pain. And it just gave me faith and confidence that if I really apply myself, that I'd be able to do it too. Before that, I didn't really believe that any of that would work. And her example just was like a shining, you know, a shining star for me to really give it a chance, to allow the practice to go deep enough to be able to embrace the pain and work with it skillfully. Other examples for me have been watching my teachers, how they react to very difficult situations. I've seen I've seen one of my teachers, be extremely challenged by a very, very difficult situation and a very difficult person, something that would have, you know, really triggered my anger and triggered a lot of reactivity in me. And I watched him really be able to stay present and kind and calm. And just watching that was so inspiring for me because it really taught me the potential of training my own mind, that I can train my mind to be calm, to be open, to be non-reactive. The opposite of faith is doubt. Of course, there are many sides to doubt. There's a kind of doubt that's very positive. It's the cutting edge of wisdom. The voice that says, I want to know for myself, not just because you say so. And the Buddha's response, in effect, was, put it into practice. Don't believe anything just because I say so. Don't believe anything just because somebody you think is worthy says so. Don't believe it because it's traditionally held to be true. Don't believe it because you read it. Believe the truth only from your own experience. If you put it into practice and you found that this particular meditation or practice leads to less greed in your mind, then you can trust that. If you find that the practice leads to less hatred and fear and aversion, you can trust that. If you find it leads to clarity and you feel less cut off and disconnected, you can trust that. Put it into practice. That's how you know. This aspect of doubt, of not believing in something because somebody else says it so, is very helpful. But there's another aspect of doubt that is far less helpful, namely endless speculation. What that is in some ways it's like thinking about the path but not actually practicing it. A personal example for me is early in my practice, I had been meditating with a Zen teacher, and then I met my first Vipassana teacher. I found it really confusing. I kept going back and forth between the two and spending way too much time thinking about which approach was right than meditating. Then I heard Jack Kornfield say something that really helped. He said they should stick to a single technique for at least 2 years. He said, get good at it first. It takes time to develop a skill. Then try something else if you want. Then you can have a real comparison. It didn't mean that the doubt disappeared suddenly, but I just stopped dwelling on it. I put it on hold. I'd see for myself through experience. I mean, it's funny, people have asked, you know, why I picked, I went through Vipassana instead of Zen. And it wasn't that I made any intellectual decision. What really happened was I had more of an affinity for meditating with my eyes closed than open. And so I just went with that. Sometimes faith is difficult. I grew up in an environment of fear and confusion. My parents were severely traumatized by their experiences in World War II. They raised us with stories of terror and regular reminders that we lived in a frightening world. We were taught to never sit with our backs to the door, to always know where every exit was. My 10-year-old sister carried a knife to school. I often thought that I just didn't have the resources to survive what my parents had survived. And I couldn't imagine wanting to. I regularly thought about all the horrible things that can happen in life, that have happened to people. Life seems so full of suffering, and I wanted a way out of that suffering. When I was a teenager, I became involved with a yoga community, which is centered around a teacher from India. My entire life became immersed in it. I went to India with a teacher when I was 16. I wore all white, became a vegetarian. I got up at 4 in the morning and chanted for 2 hours. I practiced hours of yoga. Every one of my friends was in the group. I had no one in my life that wasn't in the group. The teacher even married my friends off to total strangers. My life was a mix of discovering resources within, because I was meditating, I was practicing, but also believing the story of life, of what life was about, that the teacher told. I believed in the path I was on. I was thrilled. I thought I had all the answers to life. But then my teacher became a little too human and fallible. In fact, integrity issues became obvious. Much of the group just said, "He's testing our faith. He's testing us." I didn't want to at first, but I just couldn't not see what was right in front of me. The teacher was dishonest. I became deeply disillusioned. But mostly, it was painful to lose the beautifully constructed worldview I had, the belief system that I was living in, where I had all the answers. I was left to rely only on myself. But somehow, even with all the disappointment, the actual meditation experiences I had still planted the seed in me that the truth was within. I still knew, and in some ways, even better than before, that the truth could only be found within. I had a small glimpse that maybe there was a way to end suffering, and that seed slowly began to grow in me. Over the years, something shifted. I realized that I didn't need to trust a teacher. I didn't need to trust Buddhism, the Buddha, anything else but my own experience. I stopped seeking new ways of reinventing myself, of trying to fix myself, trying so hard to be how I thought I should be. But instead, I started digging deeper at discovering myself. I realized that the present moment had all the resources I needed. I also realized that having integrity and facing what life brings can often take courage. That I can be happy even though life can be painful and difficult. That I can cultivate the ability to face the difficult without pushing it away. Sharon Salzberg says, "It's with faith that we move into the unknown, openly meeting what the next moment brings." This was a significant shift for me, but it doesn't mean that I've never been plagued with doubt again. The habits of mind are strong, and I've had to again and again uncover deeper layers of courage as deeper layers of fear have surfaced. I've been both overjoyed and terrified by the fact that life is constantly changing. But that's the truth of life. Life is transition, movement, growth. There's absolutely nothing to hold on to. With faith, we can move into the truth of the present moment, even as it's dissolving into the unknown as we meet it. And in beginning to trust my own experience, I was able to take inspiration in the awakening of others. Meeting people whose lives were steeped in integrity with open hearts strengthened my confidence that I can train my own heart and mind. What are we talking about when we speak of faith or confidence in our practice? For me, it's what the Buddha taught, that the whole of the Dharma is to be found in our bodies and our minds. No longer do we look outside of ourselves for solutions. We are what we are looking for. Taking refuge is a fundamental ritual in Theravada Buddhism. Buddhists take refuge in what's called the Triple Gem, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. It can be done as a ritual, but on a deeper level, the act of taking refuge is about the orientation of our life. What's important? What are our priorities? What's the context out of which we make our decisions? Most of my adult life, I've been very suspicious of and rejected anything that smacks of religion and ritual. Yet something intuitive told me that taking refuge was useful to look at for me and to find a non-religious way of relating to it. And that's something that I do almost every time I meditate. It reconnects me with my commitment. So the first one is taking refuge in the Buddha. I try to connect with the level of peace that I can aspire to as a human being. The Buddha was a person who awoke, who found peace. Taking refuge in the Dharma is a commitment to a way of life that supports that aspiration. This is the Eightfold Path, a life where I'm aware of the importance of each moment, of every action, of every choice we make, that the mind can be trained towards freedom and happiness, that each moment conditions the next. Taking refuge in the Sangha was meant the community of enlightened beings. Now we tend to think of the Sangha as the community of people who we practice with and the people who practice on the planet who are dedicated to freeing themselves. So taking refuge in the Sangha is the commitment to those with whom I find support and inspiration. I try to bring to mind all those who inspire me, people like the Dalai Lama or my other teachers. And when it's difficult, I find that the most important thing to have faith in is the faith not to cling. Faith in the power of mindfulness, that it's enough just to pay attention to whatever is in front of me. Ironically, sometimes we come to really understand faith when we think we've lost it. Someone I know, a longtime practitioner, he was in the practice of taking 3-month retreats every year, year after year after year. And his retreats were always very rich and rewarding. The one year, he had 13 people in his life die. And a couple of them were close family members. His suffering was so great that when he sat retreat that year, he just went numb. He couldn't deal with it. He just felt contracted and tight. And it was so painful and so difficult and such a long retreat that the next year he just didn't want to sit retreat. But he kept practicing every day. So even though he had lost his faith on a certain level, he still kept sitting every day, twice a day. And one day he finally realized the question he needed to ask himself. What does loss of faith feel like? And once he turned his observation to that horrible feeling of loss of faith, he realized it was just another mental state to be explored, a painful one, one that took courage. But it was just another mental state. It didn't require to be solved. It only needed to be looked at. And slowly, through the process of allowing himself to really feel that loss of faith, and to hold it and to open to it, he was able to come out the other side of it. The experience of meditation has been the most significant strengthener of spiritual faith in me. But faith or confidence is something we can nurture consciously in other ways. In one of the discourses of the Buddha, he talks about four factors that are important in the cultivation of confidence and faith. The first one is association with good people. Inspiration by being around people who share our values. Another factor that helps cultivate confidence and faith is listening to the Dharma. Reading or hearing the Dharma. I try to read something every day. Sometimes it's just a small quote or a poem, but something to keep my orientation, keep myself inspired. The third factor that the Buddha said is important in cultivating confidence or faith is appropriate attention. Now that's a huge subject. What is appropriate attention? What do we pay attention to during our lives? If you look at your day, most of today, where has your mind been? What have you actually been paying attention to? Are we in the habit of only noticing what's wrong? In relationships, are we always looking, criticizing or spouses or children? Are we looking at our fellow workers critically? One of the skillful things that we learn in practice, I don't know if you've all learned about the five hindrances, but they're the hindrances to meditation. Now, there's a way of thinking, well, that is one thing that's wrong. You know, I'm restless, I have doubt, have aversion, desire, sleepiness. So it's very important to recognize those things because they do prevent us from getting to train the mind. But do we notice when we're happy? Do we notice when we're relaxed, when we're calm? What do we spend our so-called free time doing? Are we watching mindless violence on TV? Are we obsessing on how we wish our government was different? Are we spending our time regretting the past? Are we obsessing over some unimportant detail? Or are we paying attention to thoughts and activities that incline our minds towards happiness and freedom? Are we noticing what's right in front of us? Are we noticing the person we're with? And being with them in the present. The fourth factor that the Buddha said is important in the cultivation of confidence and faith is practicing the Eightfold Path. Now that's a huge subject in itself, so I'm just going to very briefly touch on it. There's three areas of the Eightfold Path: wisdom, virtue, and meditation. Wisdom means understanding the impact that our choices make, understanding that happiness comes from letting go of clinging. It means paying attention to our intentions, that what we do come out of kindness and compassion. Virtue means practicing right action in how we live our lives, how we speak to each other, and what our livelihood is, not causing harm in the world. And practicing meditation is training the mind in concentration and mindfulness. Different personality types have different ways of working with faith and confidence. Some people are faith types or devotion types. They easily fall in love with teachers or ideas. They can tend to be naive, and they have blind faith, missing discrimination and discernment. They can put so much trust in a teacher or in a process that if it's suddenly removed, they have nothing to sustain them. I'm kind of the opposite of the faith type. If one thing isn't true for me, I tend to distrust the whole thing. I'm the throw out the baby with the bathwater type. My tendency is to approach everything with skepticism. This type of personality can become aversive and close-minded. Prove it to me may seem like a good idea, but it's often really nothing you say or do will prove it to me. And there's a huge range in between. There are different ways to practice with each tendency. Sharon Salzberg says she sometimes prefers to think of fei as the willing suspension of disbelief. This is a skillful approach to cultivate, especially for the skeptical type. So rather than thinking of faith or confidence as the assumption or the taking up of a belief, it's the willing suspension of disbelief, a willingness to be open, to explore, to investigate. For the devotional type, regularly questioning where we place our faith is crucial. Are we placing it in a person? Are we placing it in anything outside of ourselves? In an idea? I have trust in skillful doubting. People do exaggerate. People often want to believe and fool themselves. People can lie. I can fool myself. I've learned not to believe everything I think. All concepts are just concepts. All words are just words. They're not reality. The difference between faith and belief is that faith is about the unknown. Belief has already made a conclusion. If you believe, it's difficult to learn anything new. Faith is the quality of the heart that stays open beyond our current level of understanding. Faith is a beginner's mind. As Suzuki Roshi said, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's mind, there are few. Thank you. So we have some time for questions and comments. Feel free to ask about the talk or about anything else in your practice. Jim?
Would you say some more about how you know how the discrimination faculty gets developed? Because faith seems like it can lead you a lot of different ways, so you need to discriminate which of the various kinds of faith has freedom at the end of it.
I think for me, I have to kind of go moment by moment, you know, whether something I'm doing is making me feel open and free in the moment, or whether it's making me feel contracted and uptight. And if it makes me hold on tighter, then it's not skillful. And if it helps me let go. And I mean, sometimes it's really hard to tell when we're trying to make a big decision. You know, like when I was trying to decide between, you know, Zen and Vipassana, there wasn't the right answer. It wasn't like if I went one way, that made me feel open and free, and the other way made me feel contracted. There wasn't the right answer. There's not necessarily a right answer. But it was important to at least make a choice so that I could try it out and move on and keep going. Yes.
You might have touched on this and I missed this. In that case, I apologize. But if you haven't, any suggestion on how to restore the lost faith?
How to, I'm sorry. How
to restore if the lost faith?
Are you talking personally? Is that something you're personally relating to at this point in your life?
Somewhat.
I did talk a little about it. You know, the friend of mine who had all those people who died in his life. And what he did was he paid attention to what it feels like. How does it actually feel to have a loss of faith? How does that feel inside you? You know, and the thing is, you become mindful of that loss of that feeling of loss of faith. Loss of faith is an emotion. It's a mental state, and it's a mental state that comes and goes. It's not a it's not permanent. So you explore it. You examine it. Is that helpful at all, or? See, the thing is what do you have faith in? So you lost your faith in what? What did you lose your faith in? So, you know, the question is that were those things that you had faith in, should you have had faith in those things? And sometimes we put faith in things that are impermanent, things that don't last, things that, and it's not a worthy place for faith. I have some questions for you. If you don't have any, I'll ask you. In fact, I'll just go from right away the question we were just working with. You know, would anybody like to share what do you actually have faith in? Rainbow?
Yeah. I have faith in humanity's ability to overcome suffering.
Great. Did everybody hear that? Humanity's ability to overcome suffering. Thank you. Anyone else want to share what they have faith in? Where they put their confidence? Yes.
I have faith in my ability to overcome suffering.
Good. That's great. And where do you turn to in calamity? Like if you were, you know, one of the things a lot of us have turned our minds in the last week to, you know, Louisiana, to Katrina, you know, if you were in those situations, some of those really difficult, difficult situations, how would your mind, where would your mind go? Where would you turn? Have you been thinking about that? You know, could you practice with it? How do you practice? Yes. You know, I can't quite hear you. I heard
in the sense of knowing, like the inner voice.
The sense of knowing.
Intuition.
Yes. Yes. Paying attention to just that faith is based on intuition, on a sense that the future is manageable, that there is freedom to be had in the future. It's it's the joining of the present moment and then the letting go that happens in that moment into the next. Because you can't ever stay in the present moment. It's always dissolving. It's always. And so that intuition that we can be with whatever comes up next, that we can be present with whatever comes up next. So the question is, I think, you know, for me, the question that keeps coming up is, do I have the resources to be with whatever comes up next, regardless of what it is? I'd like to ask another question, just changing the subject a little bit. What was your initial inspiration for starting to practice? Or starting to meditate? Yes.
Having the holistic side. I kept on reading and hearing from many different types of people that it's supposed to be good for you, for helping you to better focus, better concentrate, make you calmer, all the good benefits, all the practical benefits.
Marcy?
It couldn't hurt.
Yes.
A way to calm my mind.
What inspired you? I mean, did you read about it? Did you not meet somebody who was meditating?
Meet someone.
Mm-hmm. You know, faith can mean courage. Sometimes to be true to ourselves and our values, we have to step away from what's expected of us. It can be difficult. Have you ever done this? Have you ever experienced your faith as something that really took a lot of courage? I mean, we do it in a lot of little ways. You know, like for me, just getting up and giving a talk, you know, it takes a certain level of courage. And just trusting, you know, that that it'll be okay, regardless of whether it works out, you know, the way I wanted it to or not. Yes.
Trusting people that you didn't know that were going to be
working on here, jumping into the unknown. But it's one of the most powerful experiences coming through it. And I'm really grateful for it. It's something that, you know, I heard, you know, about prior to this that I never thought I could do or had the courage to do it. I'd rather probably die than, you know, face everything to do that. But having been put there, it's just like, just a willingness to letting go, you know, kind of share with me, you know, prayer also, you know, having people with the power of prayer.
Okay. Thank you. Richard?
One thought that is helpful for me at times, and it's sort of something that just comes as a benefit of getting older, I think, is that I realized I've never been through anything I didn't make it through. I'll bet there's nobody in this room who's ever been through anything they didn't make it through. That's a basis for some faith.
Great. It's time. So thank you all very much.